This is the WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
Well, in studio with us today from MTSU, we have Dr. Katie Falls, director of the MTSU School of Journalism and Strategic Media and Media Studies. Tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to this line of study.
Sure. So I am a health communications scholar, the head of the media studies concentration, as well as you mentioned, the director of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media. And I've always been really interested in the history of medicine, especially medicine as it has been captured in various forms of media over time. One of my previous books, Constructing the Outbreak, Epidemics in Media and Collective Memory, looked at different epidemics throughout history. So when COVID happened, naturally, I was very interested in how it was unfolding in the moment, but also how it would be captured in media and how we might look back on this moment.
When you look at medical news, health news being reported by media all across the country, how accurate is that information that's being released?
Well, first of all, it really depends on the source, but it also depends on the target audience. Is it local news? Is it more for a region or regional? Is it national? Is it international? And then we also have to evaluate information in its moment. So certainly as I was writing my book, looking at these different moments in time from December 2019 through, a couple years ago, we really had to look at, okay, what did we know in that moment and evaluate it for that moment and not as we would in hindsight or looking back on it?
What are some of the key things in the book you wrote regarding COVID, but what are some of the key things that really stand out to you?
One is just how the information about what we would later name COVID evolved. That really a lot was going on in terms of content sharing across international borders before the general public was really taking notice. And I'm talking especially about early January, mid-January. And then I was really interested at what point did we start to take notice? At what point are people talking about it on social media platforms? At what point are we starting to modify behavior? So that was one of the things I was really interested in. I was also really interested in kind of our shared experiences and also our contrasting experiences, especially in that shutdown period or lockdown period in March 2020, when you had the majority of people at home making bread, and bored and just trying to fill their time. And then we also had, on the other hand, essential workers who are working so hard just to try to make everything a little better for everybody and just to try to make it through. So again, it was about shared, but also very differentiating experiences.
How many weeks or months into COVID did it take for the general public to actually become alarmed by the whole thing?
It depends on where you look, right? And certainly the diffusion of information, Asia versus if we want to think about the United States, but it kind of ebbs and flows. So I would say the majority of people knew about it at the end of January, right? As far as alarmed about it, I would say the week of March 14th, thinking about it actually when Rutherford County Schools first sent everybody home.
And when we started seeing people pass away because of problems dealing with COVID, I would guess that would be pretty alarming at the local level whenever that occurred.
I would say so, although one thing that was different about COVID compared to epidemics and pandemics of the past is that because we knew about it for a long period of time, and certainly alarming, and in no way am I trying to say that we weren't alarmed, but it was a little bit different. And we heard the terms COVID fatigue, and absolutely that happened, meaning that we've been hearing about it for so long. It was a little bit harder to become or stay constantly alarmed unless we were personally affected, especially if we think about it over multiple years period of time.
Now, for those who had vacations planned, because I know that was a big issue, especially for those who were going on cruises, because there was a cruise ship that stayed stationed out in the middle of the ocean.
Yes, so the Diamond Princess chapter was actually one of my favorite to write. And I really enjoyed looking at this moment day by day, contrasting the news coverage of the Diamond Princess while it was quarantined for a month compared to the social media content that the actual passengers were putting out from the ship. certainly a devastating time period, but also very mundane for those on the ship. And I just found that absolutely fascinating.
You know, if you're in a science lab and you take a petri dish and you put something in it to see if it grows, that's kind of like what occurred, I would guess, on that cruise ship, because it was just sitting out there with all the same passengers. And then it seems like the problem would only grow by leaving them on there.
Well, and it did, but they didn't think that would happen, which is one of the, I would say, the most terrifying things in the moment, but also one of the most interesting things kind of looking back on it, that here the Diamond Princess thought that they were doing everything they could, and the Princess Cruise Lines thought they were doing everything they could to protect passengers. But of course, crew members still had to work because people still needed to be fed. They needed their medication. And so the cases continued to rise even while they were on the ship, which is not something that they would have thought was going to happen.
I wonder now, looking back, if they think we did all the wrong things by leaving it just sitting out there.
Probably, but it's so hard to look back on a moment, especially while they were still trying to figure out what the virus even was and how it was transmitted. I know it's kind of a tough thing, but definitely made cruise lines, at least, and I would say other aspects of the travel industry, kind of consider having plans in place for when a crisis occurs.
Again, Dr. Katie Falls with us this morning. Now, what is the new book that you wrote called?
Capturing COVID, Media and the Pandemic in the Digital Era.
Have you found a lot of lawsuits relating to COVID pop up, or were you able to document things like that yet?
We could do that. That wasn't really the focus of my book because I primarily looked at the early months of COVID and basically slices of time. And my argument is that many of the things that happened even before COVID was called COVID and we had declared the pandemic really set the stage for how it would unfold the rest of the time.
Would you find it interesting to write about things related to media in today's times? Because media has changed greatly over the last 15 to 20 years. I mean, over the last 5 years.
Yes, absolutely. And that was one reason why I wanted to focus on this digital era. It's so different than if we look at like influenza of 1918, which I studied in one of my previous books, in that it was much more straightforward. That what information were people getting? Well, we just look at the local and national newspapers day by day and can assume that most people got that content. And that's just not the case now.
Were there books written years ago that you know about that focused on media and media reporting? And have you looked at those to see the difference maybe from the 60s or the 50s even?
Absolutely. Although I would say that in terms of media reporting of disease and outbreaks and epidemics and pandemics, much more has been written on earlier epidemics.
Interesting. What, again, made you want to head this direction and write about all this?
Actually, because in spring and fall of 2020, my book was getting ready to come out on epidemics and then came out. And I was doing so much writing and so much reflecting on the moment as an expert in this area that it really made me want to also preserve what we were talking about in that moment for future generations and to have something that really can solidify at least some of these experiences as covered in media.
You know, from the outside looking in, the fascinating thing about COVID was that we even saw television shows, reality TV shows, dating shows focusing on the subject of COVID.
Yes. Yeah. And that's one reason I did a whole chapter on the pop culture aspect. And I would say that that was also probably my second favorite chapter to write, was to look at how these different TV shows, first of all, of course, the entertainment industry was shut down. And so how did they start to reopen and behind the scenes what happened? But then also looking at these different reality shows and then fictional narratives to see, did they write COVID into the storyline? And how do you do that? Especially if you leave shows on a cliffhanger and everything gets shut down unexpectedly and then you start to reopen. Do you pick up where you left off and somehow try to resolve the cliffhanger? Or like some of them did, they just passed time really quickly in a montage and then jumped into COVID. Or like Grey's Anatomy wrote a whole season about COVID. And I found it just intriguing. How do you write that in? Does it make sense? Does it work? It doesn't always work. Or do you just completely ignore that the pandemic happened and continue your storyline, kind of business as usual?
When you look back in history, I don't recall a TV show from early ages of maybe even the 70s, but I don't recall TV shows. I don't recall newspaper dramas or books that focus on any type of outbreak that kept it going as in a series.
Yeah, especially for a full season. That was a bit much, I will say, for Grey's Anatomy and to write it in. So we've seen like medical dramas especially that have written in maybe an episode that kind of references some outbreaks or kind of the what if, right? But to actually have it go on multiple episodes or a season was really unusual.
It'd be like writing malaria into a whole season of shows if you had TV back then. You know, it's just strange.
And I think that at least for some viewers, it was a bit much based on reviews and what fans said, especially with shows that wrote the season about COVID.
And for the audience, I'm sure they're trying to get away from the thought process of this lingering COVID that's just hanging around and not going away. I mean, you want to almost get out of that feeling and go into some other place.
Right. And that's one thing that I explored is that when they made these decisions, so the production team and the writers made these decisions for these TV shows, do you ignore COVID because nobody wants to talk about it and you actually want to move beyond feeling like this and thinking about this and you want to enjoy your favorite characters and as they were before this all happened? Or the flip side is, okay, we're experiencing this in real life, so we can identify with characters' experience. And I think it can work both ways, and it depends on the show and the viewer as well.
There are probably millions of bloggers out there who write something new about their life or the life surrounding them every single day. What were they doing during this time of COVID?
You know, actually, I would say that the biggest thing that people were doing were creating content or activities for other people to do. So that's definitely something that we saw in, I would say, late March when nobody was in school or very few people were in school, was creating content for other people to do, like activities like, okay, you could do this craft, or I'm going to do a live stream of, I have a friend here who is a local baker, Sam Boffin, who did a series on cooking and a Facebook series in which you could watch her and learn how to make cinnamon rolls. So we saw a lot of that, like really those mundane activities to help give other people things to do, especially with kids, which I think that was actually one of the positives, was finding ways to connect as a community when you couldn't be together.
Years from now, how do you think COVID will be interpreted or represented in museums? Like, let's say the Smithsonian, if they were to do some type of display on COVID, how do you think that's going to come out? Like 50 to 100 years from now?
Well, if we take a page from how influenza or the Spanish flu, and I'm air quoting that because, of course, it did not start in Spain. If we're looking at that, largely downplayed because I think people want to forget. I think that that's one thing that happens with kind of these really intense, long, hard moments. I would imagine we would see some stuff like perhaps masks or some of the lingo that we developed, like social distancing. Maybe some of that is captured, but I think in general, outbreaks and epidemics and pandemics are hard to capture and hard to preserve in our history, but very important to do so.
And how can people get a hold of this book?
Sure. So it's available on Amazon. It's also available through the University of Massachusetts Press site. And if you use the coupon code UMass20, you can actually get 20% off. It's also available in Barnes & Noble online.
Okay. And again, it's titled Capturing COVID:
Media and the Pandemic in the Digital Era.
Sounds good. Again, Dr. Katie Foss with us today, director of MTSU School of Journalism and Strategic Media and Media Studies. And you're a professor as well.
I am.
During COVID, what happened in your classes?
Well, MTSU went all online in spring 2020, which was really important that we did that. And then we had the option to go back in the fall, which I did, and it was an unusual time. And I actually wrote a little bit about that in my book, in the foreword, how this experience was weird for me too, right? And just taught in the ballroom with chairs spread out, which was very different. But I really liked being back in the classroom because I love teaching, and I especially love teaching in person.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
This is Peter Demas inviting you to enjoy a meal with our family at Demas's Restaurant. With cold and flu season here, nothing helps my family more than having the Demas's baked chicken and rice soup. It was a soup that was created by my grandmother, and we not only sell it by the cup, but we also sell it by the quart, by the half gallon, and by the gallon. So stop by anytime today and bring soup to your family that may be sick or a friend that's been sick, or just to enjoy it just because it tastes so good. Demas's Restaurant.
Here at Animal City in Murfreesboro, we are your go-to for everything cold-blooded. Whether it's geckos or snakes or tortoises, we've got a great selection. Plus, we've got all the tanks, lighting, and food to set up the perfect habitat. If you're not sure where to start, don't worry. Our team knows reptiles and can help you every step of the way. come see us at 919 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro. We're open Monday through Saturday, 10 to 6, and Sunday from 1 to 5. Find us anytime on Instagram at AnimalCityTN.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.